Okay, good evening, everybody. Okay, we're continuing our discussion of the Minchas and Parshas Kedoshim. Tonight's discussion is back on the mitzvah of Lo Tifnu El Ha'elilim, not to turn towards the idols of the day. Now, the turn I want to take is on the concept known as Shituf. Shituf is simple, one word, but it's short for Mishtatef Shem Shamayim Im Davar Acher, which is essentially Christianity. In other words, you take what you feel is a deity. Doesn't matter what you call the deity. You can call the deity Allah or El. Just one is an Arabic word, and one is a Hebrew word, right? You say, call the creator, right? The creator is someone we have an idea of what the creator is. The creator has expressed a will, divine will. He has commanded Abraham. He has commanded the all the religions that believe in a monotheistic single creator, whether he wherever he his will determines according to their system, but they practically all have a place for God's message to Abraham. Right? He is revered by all the basic monotheistic religions. And then they'll have different opinions about where God went from there. The Christianity and Islam both agree that God revealed a law at Mount Sinai. Right? Again, there's some differences, but with the scope of that law, the extent of that law, the way it was revealed. Okay. But what I mean to say here is that I'll tell you that while Christianity has accepted our Bible in its totality, the Hebrew Bible is part of the Christian Bible, right? However, when it comes to philosophy, or the philosophy of, let's say, of the Avodah Zarah we're talking about this evening, we're much closer to Islam. An Islamic imam can talk to you about the philosophy of religion, and it'll sound very much like the yeshiva the philosophers on the subject. Very similar. And it's possible that the reason why seems the reason why the king of the Khazars in the 9th century chose Judaism to convert his entire nation, right? This became famous in the book The Kuzari of Yehuda Halevi. Does sound familiar?
I'm thinking
Right.
of
Oh, okay. Okay, good. So the king of the Khazars called in a close. He called in a Christian, a Muslim, and a Jew, right, representatives of all three religions, and he asked each one about regarding the other two religions, which one is closer to yours? So the Muslim said, certainly Judaism. Right? Christianity is very far from Islam. They're philosophically miles apart in terms of the deity, and they don't have the same Bible. Muslims have the Quran, Christians have their Old and New Testament. They asked the Christian, which religion is closer to yours? It's even less of an issue. Christianity is founded on Judaism. Without the Hebrew Bible, they have nothing. So the Christian said, yeah, Judaism is closer. So then he asked the Jew, which of those two religions is closer? I can see two different answers. The Rambam says Islam is much closer because Islam is philosophically very similar to Judaism. But in another sense, Christianity is closer because they revere our Bible. Christians revere Tehillim, Yeshayahu, Tzfanya, they revere all of our prophets and study them and just. They may disagree as to what the purpose of their prophecies are, but the Jew said they're both founded on my religion, but they have taken the wrong turn, and I can't accept either of them. So there you have it. If a Christian was forced to convert to one of the two religions, he's going to choose Judaism. If the Muslim is forced to convert one of those two religions, he's going to choose Judaism. If the Jew is forced to convert to one of those two religions, he's going to prefer to die. So the king was so impressed by the Jew's response that he converted his entire nation, and it was a very powerful nation at the time. entire nation were converted to Judaism. So our discussion tonight is going to be an historical one, because probably the first example of shituf, and the way I want to make sure you understand what it means. It means that you believe in the deity, but that the deity is represented by something else. It's an offshoot. Christianity is just that. Jesus, certainly to a Trinitarian, okay? Because a Trinitarian believes that there's a Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, and they're all encapsulated into one. I'm not going to get into how that makes sense. Dogma makes sense to all people who accept the dogma. So I'm not going to question that now. But the idea of God taking on the human form, right, placing himself into a woman to be born, to grow up as a child and to live to approximately 33 years old, to be scourged and killed by man, not to fulfill the mission he claimed, my mission, my kingdom come and you shall see it, he told his followers, is so foreign to Jews. Jews didn't buy into this because it just didn't make sense that God would all of a sudden in the middle of history claim that the only way to reach me is through belief in my son. What about before he lived? Everyone is in purgatory because they didn't have God's son to believe in, right? So this is known as shituf. We make a partner with God with something else. Christianity the claim is that it is one. There's a connection between the two of them it's inextricable. This is what Jews really found impossible to accept, that the only way to reach the Creator is through something else. That means if you don't believe in that something else, you don't believe in the Creator. We found that incomprehensible and rather shocking. Right? In other words, so that's shituf. But if you think about it, there's something much older than Christianity where we did just this, the Egel. When we made the golden calf in the desert, the people who made it were not Jews. How do we know? Because when they made it, they said, listen to the Hebrew quote, Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher He'alucha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Here is the God, Jews, who took you out of Egypt. Who said that? What do we call them? You don't have to give it a name, but you can describe them if you'd like. Erev Rav. Okay, Vegam, it's this week's parsha. It says, Vegam Erev Rav Allah Itam. A mixed multitude, however you want to explain it, that's what the word literally means. It means that a lot of Egyptians may have been morally tended, or may have been so impressed by the miracles they saw, and were so impressed by the Jews who didn't take vengeance upon them, right? During the plague of darkness, they could have killed every Egyptian, dragged their body to the water, and taken vengeance on what they did to us, right? And then they realized that they were sold a bill of goods. What was the original impetus for the slavery? B'nai Yisrael are too numerous, they may join our enemy and kick us out of the land. We could have done that during our Makar of Choshev. So the Egyptians saw that the Israelites were good people, and there might have been a sizable many thousands of Egyptians who said, we want to join these people. And Moshe allowed them to. Thousands of them left Egypt with us and joined us. They're the ones who made the Egel.
Why are...
Because they couldn't imagine worshiping a god that you can't see.
Why? I felt like the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah is limited to men, because men, not women, were responsible for the creation of the Egel. Is that not the case?
No. Men, not women, are responsible to sit in the sukkah because it's a time-bound mitzvah, and women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. You might have heard that in a shir or something like that, but isn't it? There is a drash, and since today was Rosh Chodesh, it's worthy to just mention it, that the men contributed to making the egel, and the women did not. Because Aharon said, oh, he said, let the men and women contribute the jewelry, and when the verse that talks about the contributions only says that the men gave. Right. You might ask, how do you know that that means that the women didn't want to worship Yego? Maybe they were just stingy with their jewelry. Right? The men were more generous with their jewelry. No, because shortly after the Yego, when Moshe made another collection to collect for the Mishkan, to build the sanctuary, it says there, Beferish, the men and women donated to the Mishkan. So the donation to the Mishkan proved that the refusal to donate for the Egel was for a good reason and not just because they were stingy. Yeah? That may explain what the Magen Avraham says, is that in reward for not doing this, the women were given Rosh Chodesh. Have you heard this? Rosh Chodesh is like a woman's holiday. They get a day off. So because the Egel has nothing to do with Rosh Chodesh, but the Mishkan does. Mishkan was very famously completed on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and there was a whole big celebration in Rosh Chodesh. So in commemoration of that, so maybe that connects better to Rosh Chodesh. Okay, so let's get back to our point, is that the when the Egel was made, the people who made it said, here is your God, Israel, who just took you out of Egypt. They didn't say who took us out of Egypt. And they said, here, O Israel, is your God, as if though they are not Israel. Simple, really simple. Right? Why did they make it? Because even though there is these are Egyptians who are neo-Israelites, right? They want to join us and they want to worship our God. But they can't fathom worshiping a God that they can't see. Acceptable, right? Now, there is, throughout our history, we grappled with this mitzvah. Because Jews, incredibly, I'm just, you know, as far as we are from Avodah Zarah, how could we imagine ourselves worshiping? Right? Shlomo HaMelech made such a beautiful, incredibly beautiful prayer upon building the Beis HaMikdash. And at the end of his reign, he allowed Avodah Zarah into Israel. How does that work? Right? And Yeravam ben Nevat, right, the king of the 10 tribes, when the land of Israel was split into two kingdoms, with Yehuda and Binyamin staying around Jerusalem in the south of Israel, and the other 10 tribes up to the north. So Yeravam ben Nevat created two shrines, one in the north in Beit El, one in the south in Dan, one in the south in Beit El. And he put in golden calves into these two shrines. And he said the same line that they said, here is the God who took us out of Egypt. What? How would he do such a thing? So here's my suggestion, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty of Shitu, is that there were three types of trespasses through most of our history after we came to the land of Israel. One is Bamot. Bamot, the object of Bamot worship is God. It's just that it is an infraction, because Bamot are private sacrificial areas that defy the Torah. The Torah says your sacrifices can only be brought in the temple, or before the temple, in the Ohel Moed, in the Mishkan, whatever you call that. Now that place was not permanent until it went to Jerusalem. It stood in four cities before that: Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, and Givon. Right. Now, when it stood at Shiloh, which is most of the time of these four, you couldn't bring Bamot in your backyard. You had to go to Shiloh if you wanted to bring Korban. When it stood in the other three places, you could bring Korbanos. Actually, not in Gilgal, it was only 14 years. But when it stood in Nov and Givon, altogether approximately 50 years, you could bring Korbanos anywhere you want. Those are called Bamos. That's the first infraction. Is that even after the temple was built, Jews were bringing bamos all over Israel. Lived in Haifa, you didn't want to travel down to Yerushalayim, but you couldn't travel down to Yerushalayim because when Yeravam set up his shrines, he also set up roadblocks that you couldn't get to Jerusalem. So people figured, okay, I'll bring the Pesach sacrifice. I won't go to Jerusalem for it. I'll bring it in my backyard. People felt better to bring the korban in my backyard than to not bring it at all. This was a huge infraction, but small potatoes compared to the next two. I told you about three infractions. One is bamos. Two is egel worship in these two shrines. Who is the object of the worship of these two egel worships? Same as in the desert. Hashem. This calf, why a calf? Has to do with Egypt. Egypt is represented egel yufefia. It's influence from Egypt. Well, these calves represent the God who just took us out of Egypt. He is all powerful, and we will harness his power through worshiping to these calves. Not worshiping the calves themselves, of course not. We're worshiping the God these calves represent. Okay. It's monotheistic, right? That is infraction number two. Infraction number three is much worse than even egel worship, which is Baal worship. Baal worship. Now, to be sure, our mitzvah, al tifnu el ha'elilim, is not limited to Baal worship. There's Asherot, there's Ashtarot, there's Melechet Shemayim. There are many different avodah zarahs that the Tanakh mentions from other nations that the Jews started to worship. What's the point? People thought that these gods had powers, right? And worshiping these powers can give you success. Right? Don't question the possible powers. You don't want to mess. You don't want to get any god angry with you. Now, the gift of Abraham was to teach that all these different powers are all found in the same God, right? You were an Egyptian. You didn't go into, if a woman is about to give birth, she wouldn't go into labor without offering a goat to the goddess of fertility. That could be dangerous, right? And if she offered a goat to the goddess of fertility and still she miscarried or didn't succeed in giving birth, she would go to her high priest to complain. But I brought Hecate her goat. Yeah, but I forgot to tell you. Hecate and Osiris are in a big war right now. Osiris is more powerful. He's blocking all of the prayers. I should have told you to bring the goat to Osiris. That's what you should. It's too late now, sorry. Maybe next time. So it's confusing, but this is the so here is my suggestion to you that Yeravam ben Nevat put in those two shrines with calves in them, thinking that they would be a safeguard against Baal worship. You hear that again? He thought that by allowing the people to serve God with the calves, like they were, you know, it was common in the ancient world, that this will keep them at least worshiping God. Hashem, the God that told Abraham to move to a different place, and the God that revealed himself and Mount Sinai and split the sea, and, right? So at least let the people worship God. Because if I don't let them worship God with the egels, maybe they'll turn to Baal worship. Okay? History has shown us that this is never a good idea. I hope you can get what I'm about to say. Egel worship did not serve as a safeguard against Baal worship. It served as a gateway to Baal worship. Get it? Shortly after they were serving with the egels, they went straight to Baal. Now, what is Baal? Baal means master. But Baal is a multitude of gods, depending on what you need. If you're a farmer and you need rain, you worship the rain Baal. If you're about to fight a battle, you worship the warrior Baal. Going into labor, your wife is going to labor, you worship the fertility Baal. Okay. So, it's utilitarian.
When you talk about worshiping Egel, is that a vehicle they're using to worship Hashem?
Yes, yeah. Okay. That's what Yerubim, so I'm trying to give a Tvara to Yerubim. Correct. What's interesting is that when Baal worship started to proliferate around the time of Eliyahu, that's what he fought against. The Bible doesn't mention the eagle worship anymore. See, the Baal was much worse. And they certainly don't mention Bamos. It's only when you have good kings who fought against the eagles and fought against Baal that there is discussion about, well, what's going on with the Bamos? Oh, yeah, he's taking care of that too. Okay. So now what I'd like to do is ask the question, does Shituf constitute Avodah Zarah or not? So that has two questions for us. One, what does it mean for a Jew? Right? A Jew worships Shituf. Is that like worshiping Avodah Zarah? So you're probably going to answer right away, absolutely, of course. Jew converts to Christianity, that's Avodah Zarah. So, but what you're saying, depends who you ask, is related to this question. Does a Christian who worships Avodah Zarah, is that person called an Oved Avodah Zarah, like an Akum? That person, do we consider that person an Oved Avodah Zarah? Because there are all kinds of laws in the Gemara for how we're supposed to treat idolaters, as opposed to non-Jews, right? Let's call them Ger Toshav, or let's call them B'nai Noach. You heard of that terminology? Right? Noachide. Keeping the seven laws. The Rambam added sort of a glitch to this. The Rambam said that in order to be called Noachide, you have to keep the laws because they are godly. It's not that just you're a moral person and you don't steal and you don't kill them, right? But because you feel that they're revealed. One can argue that the founding fathers of this country were the Rambam's halachic Noahites. In their writings, they write very much about the fact that these are God-given laws. Okay, the seven Noahide laws are, do not bless, they use a bless as a euphemism, bless God. Right? Do not worship Avodah Zarah. Do not steal, do not kill. Believe in the rule of law. Right? And do not eat from an animal that was, limb was lopped off while it was alive. Right? And I don't think I mentioned Gilui Arayos, adultery. And other incest and things like that. Okay, none of these really smack of ritualistic laws, except with the possible exception of the eating, not eating the lopping off a piece of an animal. That sounds like a kashrus law. Don't eat something, sounds like kashrus. Kashrus is definitely ritualistic. So I will just tell you, not just on the topic, is that recently caves in Iraq depicted ancient man torturing to death these large animals by lopping off limbs slowly, slowly to keep them alive and then stanching the bleeding, is that then the animal stayed fresh for a little longer. Right? If you kill a tiger, you can only eat it for a day or two in the hot summer. Right? But if you just lop off one leg and eat salt and eat that or roast it or something, and then, you know, let the animal stay. It's going to be in terrible pain for a long time. And then lop off the other leg. And then you have, right, you just bought yourself 3 or 4 extra days to eat all that. So that terrible cruelty. If you could be so cruel to an animal, you could be so cruel to a person. So maybe Eva Menachai is not really ritualistic in nature. It's meant to protect human beings. What I'm arguing for is that Jews do not believe that the Gentiles of the world have to be following any ritualistic mitzvahs. We're not interested in converting the whole world to become Jewish and wearing tefillin and keeping mitzvahs and keeping kosher. If they express a desire to do so, fine, I'll be do so. But to go around proselytizing, to go around mass conversions like Muslims and Christians did, which explained their big numbers, then that's not, we wouldn't hold that such a conversion would even work. Right. Okay, so we understand that what we feel are rules that govern the families of mankind, right, are these seven mitzvahs that are not rich, necessarily ritualistic in nature. Now, let's get back to our question here. Well, almost all poskim believe that if a Jew is confronted with the unhappy choice of accepting Christianity or dying, throughout our history, they accepted death. Because they felt that to believe that the only way to get to the Creator is through his son was not just mishagas, it was avodah zarah, it was idolatrous. Right? However, from the standpoint of a Noahide, right, if a Noahide believes in shituf, that does not make that Noahide over the avodah zarah, and that has a lot of ramifications. Because there are certain things we're not allowed to do with respect to idolaters that we are allowed to do with Gentiles who are not idolaters. For instance, right? The Shulchan Aruch Paskins, you're not allowed to sell land in Israel to idolaters. The way the Torah has traditionally been understood to say, but if it's a Gentile who's not an idolater, you can sell land in Israel to him. Which is the excuse given by the people who believe in what's called the Heter Mechira during the Shemitah year. Right? You familiar with that? You can sell the land of Israel to a Gentile.
When you say idolaters, is that the Baal or the lesser?
So Baal or Christianity.
Either
today.
All
right. Right? Or today there's no Baal, pretty much. But here's the thing. The Rambam Paskind, right, that if a Muslim puts a sword to your throat and says, accept Allah right now or I will kill you, accept him. Allah is God in Arabic. He's just saying, accept God. Right? Now, if he thinks that means that you just converted to Islam, right? Okay, so what does that mean? Can you go to a mosque and get down on your knees and say, God, save me, I'm not well, and my wife needs a refuah? Okay, you're praying to God. Right? The mosque is a place where you pray to the Creator. However, in a Christian church, the church, it's different. Right? Now, you see, you could say that, but we're praying to the Son of God, who is God. Because the Trinity, it's the same. But I'm just saying what the poskim said, Rambam said, and others, is that Christianity is removed from the function of monotheistic belief in traditional belief in Jewish belief in God. So here are some. I'm going to bring you some proofs to this point. Is that a Christian? And again, there's huge differences of opinion. If a Christian is an idolater and he touches your wine, he makes it Yayin Nesa, right? But if he's not an idolater, it's true that if he touches your wine, you can't drink it, but you can certainly sell it. I mean, no, that Rashi sold wine to Gentiles. Rashi engaged in commerce with Gentiles and wine in France.
We aren't all.
So they're idolaters for a Jew. A Jew is given the choice, worship Christianity or die. He has to choose death because it's considered for him idolatry. But for the Christian, that does not make him an idolater.
But if any Christian that worships me touches wine.
So I would say I want to, this is for around like the Middle Ages and even the time of the Gemara. Today it's because of intermarriage. And intermarriage is a question whether they're idolaters or not. Today, not touching wine has to do with socializing. So, and yet, the original, just this is a little tangent right now, yet the original prohibition because of libations, because when a Christian drank wine, he would pour off, this is for, you know, I'm going on a trip, this is for Mercury. Right? May Zeus make us successful tomorrow, and pour off and then that wine is for Zeus. So that makes it like a korban. It makes it like a tikrovis of Avodah Zarah. It's very prohibited. So we have a rule in the Gemara, Maseches Avodah Zarah, that if you cook wine before the Gentile touches it, right, then it's no longer worthy of a libation. The Gentiles agree with this? Doesn't matter. Cooked wine is not what we call ra'ui l'mizbeach. It's not, you can't pour it as a libation. Therefore, if you are familiar with, if you look on this on the back of a wine bottle, it says mevusha. Right. That's a separate question. I know some people who do not like to make kiddush on mevusha, but based on the Gemara in Bava Basra, the same Gemara is interpreted to allow making kiddush with mevusha wine. But I'll leave that aside.
Yeah.
The thing with that mevushal does is that since it renders it incapable of being a libation, so if you cook it before the Gentile touches it, it's okay. You can drink. Yeah, and in kosher restaurants, you have Gentile waiters who are pouring wine for everybody. Okay. Okay, you're Mara? You want to join us here? We're in this room. Okay, but here's the rub, is that since what Camila just said before, is that since today, the prohibition of wine has nothing to do with libations. No one's pouring libations. Prohibition of wine has to do with socializing, right? Socializing can be done just as well with cooked wine as uncooked. You get this sort of like a contradiction. Tosfos asks this question. And Tosfos also asks about whiskey. You've never heard of a prohibition against having whiskey touched by a Gentile. And yet, socializing can take place with whiskey just as much as wine.
Maybe it's just...
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Isn't that the same also for sure?
Yes. Yes. Cooked foods and bread and oil and bread and milk. Yes, these are all examples that we learned in the first day. But that's Tosfos leaves us with like an unsatisfying answer. He just says, well, since the original prohibition was because of libations, so as long as this thing is rendered unusable for libations, either because it's not wine at all, i.e. whiskey, or because it is cooked, and cooked wine is no longer worthy for libations. So if it's cooked or if it's whiskey or something else that wouldn't be a libation in the first place, you can have this even though a Gentile touched it. And ostensibly, these things are perfectly fine for socializing. But that's what we have. Okay, I'll leave you with a few interesting proofs to what we was just saying before about Shituf. You ever hear of a medrash that on the way back to Israel, Naomi and Ruth, right, after her sister-in-law already went back home, right, Orpah turned back home. You all with me? You all know the story, right? So Orpah's back home, and Naomi is still trying to get Ruth to turn back, right? And Ruth responded with perhaps the most famous line of the Megillat Ruth, which is, don't tell me to go back. Because where you go, I'll go. Where you sleep, I'll sleep. Your God is my God. Your people is my people. Where you die, I will die. And I'll be buried there. According to the Gemara in Yevamos and the Targum to the Pasuk, this was a response to 6 points that Naomi made to her about why she should go back home, about how difficult it is to become a Jew. And she said, you know, you can't even fathom this. If you join our people, we have restrictions on how far you could walk on Shabbos, known as Trum Shabbos, right? What was her response?
Will you go, I'll go.
Will you go, I'll go. You restrict your walking, I'll restrict you. And she said, when you're in Moab, they're very promiscuous in Moab. You can sleep wherever you want. You can meet, have a date and go home and with him. But if you join me, we have such restrictions on on everything until you're married? And her answer was, well, you sleep awesome. Okay. So the next point is what Rav Chaim Brisker brings out as proof for this shituf argument. He says that Naomi told her, if you come home with me, we who can only believe in one God. We don't allow idolatry like you have in Moab. So she said, your God is my God. That's a problem, because our conception of Avodah Zarah is, that's one of the seven things we just said. So what's the new thing? What's the new thing you're accepting because of becoming Jewish? That she answered, your God is my God. So that's how Rav Chaim answered. He said that in a deeper sense, what she was telling Ruth was, as a Moabite, you can make egels. You can fashion all kinds of representations of your gods, right? Even if you believe in one God, there are things you could do as a Moabite, as a Ben Noach, right, as a Gentile, that you can't do as a Jew. What would that be? Oh, shituf. Okay. Gemara Tainus says that when Yonah asked the people to repent, it says that they became returned to God by refraining from their gezel, from their theft and their violence. But in order to return to God, you would have to get rid of your avodah zarah. The answer is, again, right? They didn't get rid of avodah zarah totally, but they got rid of it. I mean, you know, they still kept shituf. Okay, what do you, I'll close with this. What would you say is worse? Worshipping Christianity with a full heart, with this interpretation that we were giving all along of shituf, right? Essentially converting to Christianity, or someone who forces you to bow down to a hardcore of avodah zarah, like Indiana Jones' Temple of Doom of avodah zarah, right? Like real hardcore of avodah zarah, to bow down. But while you're bowing down, you're saying in your mind, I don't do this. I'm just doing this because they'll kill me if I don't do it. Right? You're not accepting it. Now, guys, ready to go inside? Is this, are they learning in there?
Yeah, there's a
woman. Oh, they're in there? All right, we'll dive in here. Or, yeah, we'll dive in right here. Just bring in some Sidurim. So. Would you agree that I mean, not everyone agrees with this. I'm just asking you what you think. Get down on your knees and feign worship to a real hardcore avodah zarah, or actually believe in shituf that is presenting its case before God. This is God. This is the God of Israel, the God who took us out of Egypt. Only they have a detour. Call that detour the Egel, of the calf worships, worship of Rav and Ben Avot, or even Christianity. So what do you think? Which is worse of these two? Because there's a Lamaisa, don't come in here, we're going to dominate you.
For a Jew. I thought Baal is worse.
Right, but while the person is worshiping Baal, he doesn't really believe in it. So I'll get to this. I'm going to start next week with this, and we're going to move on from Avodah Zarah. We've been spending quite a bit of time on Avodah Zarah. We'll move on to the next minute. There is Sefer HaEshkol. You heard of Sefer HaEshkol? He has a big discussion on this with respect to Naaman. Did that ring a bell? Naaman, who was the Aramean general who was cured of his leprosy. And it says that afterwards he became Jewish and he wanted to join the Jewish people. But he still had to go to his temple to worship with his king. Okay. All right, guys.